Chapter 13. Decejus. The people of Ratorna had been waiting for the war to come for a long time. At first, it had been something far away. The anarquistas had been springing up all across Campeche and Yucatan, forming communes, broadcasting their discontent with the government over in the Distrito Federal, and calling the foreign corporations thieves. Then someone had started the fighting. Marches had turned to riots. Some offices and factories were bombed. The anarquistas blamed corporate agents provocateurs. The government blamed the anarquistas. The army got involved, which was bad. Then the army got involved on both sides, which was worse. For over a year, the southern states of Mexico had been a battleground. At first, it had just been the government against the anarquista rebels and their supporters, but chaos had spread like a brush fire. Once the oil installations were attacked and the mines shut down, the corporations had sent their own troops in, over whom the government had no control. And the corporations were not run by bad people, considered Dr. Tea Decejus. They wanted to protect their property and their people, and they wanted to restore peace so everyone could get on with their lives. She wasn't someone who spouted the anarchista creed and said anyone taking a foreign paycheck was a traitor. Her own funding came straight from Médecins Sans Frontières, after all. The problem was that the multinationals had, of course, turned to private contractors to police their holdings in Campeche and Yucatan and Tabasco. They were corporations, not governments. They didn't have armies. They put the jobs out to tender, because apparently there was a global market in bands of armed men who were interested in freelance regime change. They were not the army. They were not beholden to the government or the people. They did not much care how they went about things, so long as they got results and didn't go over budget. There were no openly confessed anarchista supporters in the little village of Ratorna, but Decejo still dreaded the coming of the mercenaries. From the stories the anarchista radio told, and from the tales of the refugees, she didn't think the private security soldiers would care about political loyalties. They ran up and down the country like packs of mad dogs. And she had something here in Ratorna that they would want to know about. She had her clinic and her hospice, and inside them she had something terrible. She went about her rounds there with perfect professional detachment, calm words, a steady hand. She used up her dwindling stock of drugs, and she used her phone to take photos of the burns and the discolorations, and the bodies. She hadn't sent the pictures out over her patchy satellite connection. She hadn't shown them to anyone. She was terrified that such communications might be intercepted, that they would be traced back to her and the people of Ratorna. Only two others knew, Father Esteban and Jose Blanco, who had been nominally left in charge when the ranch owner fled north. Ever since she'd worked out what she was looking at, each day at the hospice she had been waiting for someone to turn up with guns and questions. Maybe the mercenaries, maybe the anarquistas or the government, maybe just the roving bands of displaced men who had decided to take what they needed from anyone too weak to prevent them. When Luke Perez and his friends came hollering and yelling out from the pasture, she thought the time had come. They had gone out to see what had spooked the cattle, and now their battered old 4x4 was screeching to a dusty halt in the center of Ratorna. They were calling for Blanco, for the priest, for anyone. Monsters, they were shouting. There were monsters coming. Tea Decejus had studied medicine in Guadalajara. She had spoken at conferences in Paris and Madrid. She did not go to church. She had not believed in monsters since she was a child. Not until this war. She brought Luke Perez to the church, the de facto center of governance, since Ratorna became its own island state in the shifting conflict. She sat the man down with Father Esteban and sent for Jose Blanco. Time for a town meeting.
What are we dealing with here?
Was Blanco's first question. He was a big man who had been working on becoming a fat man before everything kicked off. He had also been a vicious drunk back in the day, but he might just have been the one thing in Campeche the war had actually improved.
"This is their dog soldiers,"
young Father Estevan pronounced grimly.
"That means it's the company military."
Blanco tugged at his mustache.
"Luke says he saw just two."
"We don't know how many he didn't see," DeSejos murmured.
"So, tell me about them."
She shrugged. "There's absolutely nothing about how they're being used here. Red Mark and the others are keeping it all under wraps. Worldwide, they're new. They're still experimental. A lot of people don't want them. The whole point of them is, you send them where you wouldn't risk humans. Except their detractors say, you send them to do things human soldiers wouldn't do. Extermination missions. No conscience. No remorse."
"They've no souls,"
Estevan added, and at DeSejo's raised eyebrows.
Sorry, party line. Genuine papal pronouncement.
Estevan was a very junior priest, and DeSejos always figured he'd been sent to backwoods Retorna to cool off after having ideas.
"Probably. They're here ahead of the regular troops, checking us out."
DeSejos' voice shook very slightly, thinking what they might find. "But they might..."
"They might be here to take Retorna off the map,"
Blanco finished for her.
"I shall round up everyone with a gun. Perhaps they are only two."
"They're supposed to be bulletproof."
Blanco shrugged.
"They are animals," he said. "Animals die."
It wasn't long before the cry went out that something was prowling about the edge of the town. By then, Retorna's people were mostly behind the strong walls of the church, or in the big house that Blanco was taking care of. Blanco himself had every rifle and shotgun in the village ready and loaded and in the hands of men or women who could use them. A barrel was poking out of almost every window. DeSejos was at the big house, doing her best to keep everyone calm, when she heard Blanco swear.
"Mother of God, what is that thing?"
She pushed to his window for a look. She was expecting something like a man and a dog, like some movie werewolf, perhaps. This was different. This was bigger, for a start. It shambled up to the outskirts of Retorna on 4 feet, but then rose up onto 2, tall as most of the buildings in the village. For a moment, DeSejos could only process a vast, dark mass, almost shapeless in its lazy bulk. No dog, this.
"It's a bear," she whispered.
"That's not a bear,"
Blanco spat. What were bears, after all? Children's toys and sad, sagging zoo inmates. DeSejos had thought she knew bears, their shape and size. This thing was like a great pillar of fluid muscle with claws and teeth. And a gun. The weapon was on some sort of harness at the monster's side. But if you had melted down and recast all the rifles in Retorna, you wouldn't have reached the size and weight of that one weapon.
"Don't shoot. If you shoot, we're at war. Don't shoot until we have no choice,"
DeSejos murmured.
"How stupid do you think I am, woman?"
Blanco replied, but without rancor. His eyes were wide and frightened, his knuckles white about his shotgun. The bear thing lifted its snout in the air and scratched at itself, claws digging beneath the straps of its harness.
"People of this village, hello."
The voice was very loud, very sudden, enough to send people scattering back from the windows as though it was an attack. DeSejos heard one shot from the direction of the church, someone's nervous trigger finger betraying them. For a moment, the world held its breath. But the bullet didn't seem to have gone anywhere that might trouble the bear.
"Good day," boomed the bear.
Loud, yes. But the voice itself was wholly wrong for the creature.
Female. Soothing. Pleasant out of any other mouth. The sort of voice a news anchor or a government spokeswoman might use, or someone selling something. Its Spanish was textbook formal.
Nobody said they could talk,
Blanco growled.
I suppose they'd have to report.
But that's not what this is. DeSejos watched the bear's muzzle cast left and right.
Is it going to tell us to leave, do you think?
DeSejos gave him a look.
You think it's here to evict us? Like a landlord?
I have no goddamn idea what that thing wants.
We're not here to fight you,
the monster boomed consolingly, as if on cue. It spread its clawed paws wide, but if the gesture was intended to be reassuring, then it failed completely.
So where's the other one?
Blanco demanded.
Or the other ones?
Abruptly, he pushed away from the window, and she heard him passing the word on. Keep your eyes out. This might be a distraction. As distractions went, DeSejos considered, an enormous gun-toting talking bear should win prizes. Under other circumstances, she'd have paid to see that. The village was very silent after the thunder of the bear's words, so the sound of the church door opening seemed shockingly loud. DeSejos ran over to another window, seeing Father Estevan there, closing the portal behind him. He had dressed in his black cassock, every inch the priest, and she saw him cross himself and look skywards.
Get back inside!
Blanco bellowed at him. And then the bear shifted, and she saw one paw dart for that huge gun and draw back. Jose paled, and Estevan was holding his hands out just as the bear had, save that a single swat of one paw would shatter every bone in his body.
What the hell is he going to do?
Blanco moved with her, window to window, to follow the priest's progress.
He's going to exorcise it?
And at her look, he went on.
What? Spirits out of swine, it's in the book. So why not out of this monster?
You think Redmark's going to war with bears possessed by devils? DeSejos asked him.
He gave her an odd look.
You don't see a thing like that, a talking animal, and maybe wonder?
DeSejos got out her phone and tapped to the camera, zooming in the focus until she could see Estevan clearly, following his progress. His hands were shaking, she saw. Seeing him standing there in the bear's long shadow, she could hardly blame him. But he spoke, gesturing. Was he driving the beast out? A fire with the Lord's righteousness? That didn't sound like the Father Estevan she knew. Perhaps he was offering it some coffee. The thought of a gun-toting, talking, caffeinated monster bear struck her irresistibly, and she bit back a sob of horrified laughter. The bear replied, hunching low, the rumble of its voice still audible, even though it had adopted a more conversational volume. DeSejos thought about that voice, blandly comforting in a slightly artificial way, and surely not designed to be deployed in a war zone. Unless this bear was some bio-engineered diplomat, some first contact specialist of the new animal kingdom. Perhaps Redmark would make all its corporate statements through random fauna now. At last she saw Estevan nodding, and the huge beast sat down, ponderously.
Sweet Jesus!
Blanco exclaimed.
He's tamed it!
DeSejos shook her head, but something had plainly happened out there between priest and monster, and now Estevan was coming back, waving at the big house.
What does it want?
Blanco yelled at him out of the window.
It wants...
Estevan stopped and closed his eyes for a moment, and only then did DeSejos see just how very scared he had been and how he had wrestled with his fear.
It wants to use our internet connection!
Blanco and DeSejos, exchanged dumbfounded looks.
And food! It has some friends that want feeding!
Estevan went on.
Time to slaughter the fatted calf!